Welcome, everybody, to the 29th edition of The Art of Assembly, with the title The Right to Flow, Water as a Source of Life, Conflict and Legal Utopias. The Art of Assembly is an ongoing nomadic series of lectures and conversations that take place always in different contexts. This podcast is based on a live event on September 21st, 2024, at Tangente Festival in St. Pölten, Austria, in the frame of the exhibition The Way of the Water. My name is Florian Malzacher, I'm the host of this series. It was of a kind of a strange, almost uncanny timing to have this edition in Lower Austria just a few days after the disastrous flood that had put large parts of the country, but also Poland, Czechia, Romania, underwater. Uncanny because we precisely wanted to talk, as it was planned for a long time, about humanity's relationship with rivers. Water is a major protagonist in all mythologies, a metaphor for life itself, and at the same time, the subject of countless, very concrete and fast-growing conflicts. We can assume that many of the coming wars, migration streams, and so on, will revolve around water as a resource, and they already do. The climate catastrophe drastically reinforces this, but the floods of recent days, and recent years, also show that something has been wrong for a very long time with our attempts to tame and instrumentalize nature in general, and rivers in particular. The exhibition The Way of the Water in St. Pölten, which we were a part of, followed the course of the Traisen River in and around St. Pölten. Many of these artworks fell victim to the flood and had disappeared or only remained in fragments. So the title of our talk, The Right to Flow, might have sounded almost cynical under these circumstances, where not only the Traisen seemed to have usurped the right by force. But we decided to use this opportunity to broaden the view from the concrete disaster and try to understand in more general terms what could, what should change. We wanted to ask how water can be seen not only as a commodity based on concepts such as ownership and exploitation, but as a common good or even a partner. One aspect we looked at was how different cultures, indigenous cultures, but perhaps also ancient, forgotten cultures of the very land we were standing on, offer different approaches to our relationship with nature. Another aspect we followed was based on legal concepts, which had not only been discussed, but recently, at least at a few places, actually been implemented. For some years now, non-human entities have been granted legal personalities, which basically means that they are treated like humans for limited legal purposes, allowing them to sue, own property, and enter into contracts. And indeed, these two aspects, indigenous knowledge and current legal discourses, are not separate but closely interwoven, as two of our speakers have shown. So the speakers tonight are Irena Rangimarie Omaki Ransfield-Röse, member of the royal family of the Waikato tribe, who opens the conversation with her intimate knowledge about the connection of the Maori people with the Whanganui River in Aotearoa, New Zealand. Indigenous activist, writer, and scholar of legal anthropology, Edson Krenak Naknanuk, shows how the legal imagination of indigenous people offers a different idea of ownership, not only for the Amazon. In her play The Water, writer Katrin Rögler reflects on how a mixture of fear and repression, actionism and bureaucracy, empty political promises and personal interests are preventing targeted action against the climate crisis. And last but not least, the artist and philosopher Elisabeth von Samsonov is fascinated by the bifunctionality that separates water as a symbol of life and its disciplining in technology and industry. But now, with no further ado, I want to introduce our first speaker. I mentioned already the concept of legal personhood and rights of nature that had growing impact in recent years. But actually, the very first river that has been granted legal personhood was the Whanganui River in Aotearoa, New Zealand. So I'm very happy that our first speaker is Irena Rangimarie Omaki Ransfield-Röse, who is the daughter of paramount chiefs of the Ngati Kahungunu and member of the royal family from the Waikato tribe. She is a guardian carrier of the tribal knowledge and a doctor of traditional Maori medicine. She has spoken and lectured at many conferences and universities on the subject of ecology philosophy, ecosophy, and is an independent knowledge network expert at the United Nations.
For the United, I would like to welcome with a song. But in some way, I would like everybody to join me. We have a simple word in Maori called na. Just say it. Everybody, na. Na. Okay. And then you can say to get the attention of somebody, na. Yes, absolutely. But I want to bring the beauty of our na into something called anana. Anana means wow. Te kaha te manawa e kaha e na e e tani mata titi ro rai ra. One of the most beautiful things with the na is love. Aroha na. And the wisdom on everything. The reason why you are here as people. You are tamawahine. You are Tamatani. You are the water of your mother. You are the water of your father. And it comes down. Enna. It's Ahikumba. The fire and the water in the heart. Very simple. We are the rivers of the world. We are the rivers in our hearts. Because we are simply, purely, essentially, the love of all creation. Love of God, love of Mother Earth. This is not religion. This is my heart, the essential, symbiotic essence of every living being ever created. The water, the air, the fire, the earth, heat, to move cold, to move and love. These are the seven elements of creation. And each and everybody here, this is what you are. Love. So I'm happy to be here because open this situation for Poulton. Two rivers, one flowing very well, one not flowing so well, but now they are overflowing. And for me, this is the intention of the people and their love. It's not just a matter of art. It's a matter of loving, caring. It's not a matter of politics. Once again, it's a matter of loving, caring. Who are the politicians without the people? There is a beautiful saying in Māori, he mea tinui he tangata, tangata, tangata. What is the greatest gift? It is people, people, people. People of the land, people of the sky, people of the water. We are all related. We are the people and related completely, totally. Mother Earth, this is my passion. I am a champion for Mother Earth, and I always will be. I try to teach people to say good morning and I love you, Mother Earth, in the morning. Good evening, I love you. Good night, Mother Earth. Just so simple. If we want to bring climate back into its balance, we have to meet this within ourselves. So, kia ora koe rā, e tēnā koutou katoa. Ki te kōrero o te manawa o Māori. I am speaking as a heart from Māori people. I am the Whanganui River because this is the heart of my people. Not just representative. It is our heart. We never lost the symbiotic connection. I am a river. Not because it's legally recognized, but I watch that water flow through me. It's my ancestral water. My great-great-grandmother was the chieftainess that signed for that water. So no, yes, so are you. Kia ora koe rā, tēnā koutou katoa, kia ora. I greet you. I thank you. Thank you.
Reina, thank you so much for this beautiful opening. I think that for sure was the most beautiful opening of any other assembly so far. Reina will also close the session later on and join us in the conversation. And Edson, you have a difficult task now, but I'm sure you will manage. I'm very happy that you are here. Edson Krenak Naknanuk is an indigenous activist, scholar, and writer. He is currently completing his degree in legal anthropology at the University of Vienna. In 2016, you were the 10th recipient of Brazil's prestigious National Tamoyospa Award for Indigenous Writers for your book, The Borom's Dream. Your short story, Kren and Pokrain, Why the Krenak People Lack Twins, was featured in the UNICEF recommended anthology, NOS, Anthology of Indigenous Stories. In 2019, you assumed the position of Indigenous Rights Equity Coordinator at the US-based Indigenous Rights Organization, Cultural Survival. We have some magazines here also to look at if somebody is interested. You're coordinating cultural survivals programs in Brazil, and you're a member at large of the board of the Society for the Anthropology of Lowland South America, and I'm very happy you're here.
Okay, here, Borum, Tanaka, Tanaka, Tanaka. Here, Borum is a greeting in Krenak language. Tanaka, Tanaka, Tanaka is when we greet our rivers for our rituals. And despite of the fury of some rivers in the world in Europe, I will try to give some perspective on that, if helps. And we have to greet them because they are our oldest ancestors. And before I begin, I would like to invite some relatives from the Amazon, because I will be speaking about their home, their house in Brazil. And the way we invite our relatives and other relatives to be with us is by mirroring or using something that represents them. And then I'm going to use this coca over my shoulders today, asking their blessing for me to be speaking about their relatives, that also our relatives. I, as Florian already mentioned, my name is Edson Krenak. I'm very glad to be part of this project that I think without demagogy, without exaggeration, I hope this night can change you, can change how you live in this world, not as something disconnected, but connected again, like my sister just mentioned before. Well, I am from Brazil. I'm from an indigenous tribe called Krenak. In Brazil, we have more than 300 indigenous peoples. When I say 300 indigenous peoples, imagine a place like Europe with 300 countries, speaking about 200 languages, different from each other. This is the indigenous peoples in Brazil. We have a very deep connection to nature, like many people know. But one thing that perhaps characterizes the indigenous peoples, not only in Brazil, but all over the world, is the fact that we escaped. We escaped the idea, the mindset, the lifestyle that divorced with the planet, with Mother Earth. Disconnected human being from nature. We escaped that mindset, called in many places colonialism, called in many places materialism or capitalism, whatever name you name it, you can use. But indigenous peoples, many in Brazil, in the world, they see the planet, the other beings, other species that live in our planet as our relatives. That's why I am talking about cosmic kinship. It's a cosmic family. We see the rivers, the forests, the other animals as other humans. You are human people. The river is a human river for indigenous peoples. And seeing humanity in other species living on the same planet that we live, we discover not only the connection we have with them, but the respect we owe them. The respect we have to give them. And also when we talk about the rights of nature, the river has a right to go to court to defend itself, to have contracts. Or we talk about the rights of a forest. We are not saying something new or something nonsense or fictional. It's something that is part of our everyday lives. We never step on the river without asking permission. We don't use the river. We have a relationship of reciprocity with the river. We don't damage the river. We don't drug the river. We don't violate the river. We don't hurt the river. That's why it's very easy for us to understand that the river has rights. Because the river, in many cultures, in my culture, Krenak, the river, Watu, I will talk about this river soon, is our grandfather. He's our oldest ancestor. And we used to go, I will explain why, we used to go to this river, to talk to this river, to hear, to listen to this river. But for 10 years, this river is in coma. He cannot talk to us anymore. Some members of my people killed themselves. They remain silent ever since this crime happened. And we are almost unable to talk to our greatest or oldest ancestor because he decided to dive into the planet, the earth, and disappear from our face. In the Amazon, the connection of the rivers are the soul of the forest. Is the forest, the forests are the owners, the masters of indigenous peoples, like Yanomami people. For decades on the media, international media, Yanomami people. Why? Because international corporations go there, don't consult them, don't talk to them, invade their lands, their rivers for gold, for metals, contaminate their lands, kill their rivers. And the Amazon forest that is in many people's imagination as the most pristine, it's like a paradise in the world. You cannot drink from the water from any river in the Amazon forest. You cannot safely swim there. Because all rivers in the Amazon forest, they are contaminated with mercury and other heavy metals. All rivers of Amazon forest are sick. The fish are sick. One of the biggest cities that exported to all Brazil, fish for all Brazil and for all other countries, including European countries, this fish has 6-7 times more quantity of mercury in their bodies than what is considered safe for human beings to consume. This data is from Fiocruz. We can talk more about that. But coming back to the relationship of indigenous peoples, they see the rivers as the protectors of life. If they don't protect only the lives that live on the ground, they protect the life that also flies around. They protect the forest from above. I don't know if you heard about the flying rivers of the Amazon rainforest. These flying rivers is a natural phenomenon discovered by some scientists in the West a few decades ago, but our people knows this for centuries. They always talk about the rivers that live and travel in the sky. And these rivers that goes to the sky through the tree, because these trees evaporate, the trees that send the rivers to the sky. Each tree, I already put this information there, each tree can release a big old tree, almost 300 liters of water per day. By doing that, they say these rivers and the trees, the forests, they keep the sky protected. They keep the life protected on the planet. That's why they use the expression, if the sky falls, life is in a big risk. It's a catastrophe. It's like a bomb, like what is happening in Palestine, like is happening in Sudan, in many places, when these rivers cannot be sustained in the air, flying, they say, human life, human beings are no longer protected. And when they explain, when the floods happened, because we are hurting so much the rivers, the forests, who are the sisters of the trees, the sisters of the rivers. Protect the rivers. The rivers protect the forests. We are hurting them by deforestation, for mining, for cow, for huge industrial agriculture, for beef, for hydrogen, to produce the digital new technologies. This collar I'm using here, in honoring a friend, he lives in a region. They used to have a traditional river called Jequitinhonha River. Jequitinhonha means the river that gives the fish as a gift. The fish is a gift. Everything the river gives is a gift. They see that way. But this river, by his village, can no longer flow. If you go there, there's no river. There is a mud quarry, like of a stream, passing by their houses. There's nothing there. You know why? 5 years ago, two major mining companies start extracting lithium to produce electric cars, to produce computers, to produce the so-called clean energy. This year, Amazon people, they are experiencing the hardest, the toughest drought in history ever recorded. Can you believe that these three pictures are the same river, the second most important river in the Amazon rainforest? Amazon rainforest is the size of European Union, European continent. This is the rainforest, considering Brazil's area. If you consider Colombia, Venezuela, Peru, Ecuador, Bolivia, then it's larger than Europe. And these rivers, when they are hurt that way, the flying rivers will not protect human beings. And human beings will be not protected by the rivers. The rivers who have the right to flow, they will shout. They will cry out. When they flood, unfortunately, many people lose everything. People die. But it's because they are hurt. Because they are claiming, they are crying, they are asking, please don't hurt us anymore. Amazon forest is not the lung of the world, as in the 80s, in the 90s they used to say, I'm concluding. But Amazon forest is responsible for the rain equilibrium in our world, in our planet. The balance we need to plant our crops, the balance we need for our rain, for our seasons in the world, the balance we need for the forest, for the river, are being disturbed by the climate crisis we are living in. And indigenous peoples are dying with their rivers. We are, as my relative said, champions of nature, but we cannot fight alone. This is my grandfather of my people, the Watu River. I will give you time to process this information. This river, for generations and generations, I grew up by this river. I remember many times going there to fish, to play with the fish. I would fish, talk, play with them, and then give back to the river because it was not for me to eat. But I start seeing like sometimes a terrible smell from the river. I knew already decades ago that the river was getting sick because surrounded by the river, the forest was being destroyed by mining, corporations. And 10 years ago, this happened. Justice to this date, has not been served. To the river, to the people, to no one. The companies responsible for this crime is still selling, negotiating the market. They have the right to continue to do, to be, and to trade whatever. But the river and our people has no right to flow, to live, to protect each other. That's why natural catastrophes, they call it, natural catastrophes are happening more and more in the world. Because we are hurting, we are killing our protectors. Indigenous peoples are stewards and are with them claiming, please join us to protect our protectors. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for this. We will come back to it, but I now would very rigidly continue with our order of speakers, and I'm also very happy that Katrin Röckler is here. We will move now a little bit, to the Western side of it and to the Western negligence to it, maybe. Katrin Röckler is a writer working in prose as well as in theater and radio plays. One reason why it is great to have you here tonight is that you recently published the play The Water, which has premiered at Staatsschauspiel Dresden. We will talk a bit about it later. You have received numerous prizes for your literary work, most recently the Elsa Lasker Prize, the Grand Salzburg Art Prize, and the Heinrich Böll Prize. And you are a member of the Akademie der Künste in Berlin, for which you were the vice president from 2015 to 2024. And of the Akademie für Sprache und Dichtung. And you teach literary writing in Cologne and are currently a member of the RBB Broadcasting Council, and I'm happy you're here. That's how it is with the introductions.
Thank you very much. Thank you both for your very rich speech you gave here and your singing and welcoming us. And I have to say, I do not know much about water. In the last weeks, I understood that even better. But it is maybe not a good moment to show off with knowledge. It's better to be more humble, at least as an author sitting dry on stage, or standing dry on stage. 5 years ago, I sat together with Antje Boetius and Frank Radatz on a terrace in Berlin. She is the very well-known Earth System scientist and Leibniz Award winner, chief of the Polar Expedition in the North Sea. He is author, dramaturg, and director. Both of them founded the Theater of the Anthropocene around six years ago. Because they were thinking, the scientists have sent their message, but nobody is listening. Not only the scientists, of course, as we learned this evening. Now, but she's Antje Boetius. She's the scientist. That's why she's connected. Now we need the art to deliver. They asked me to write a play about the status of this world in sense of its ecological multi-crisis. It was more an idealistic demand than a proper business proposal, which came later from the Saxonian State Theater in Dresden. I thought, how can I do this? It is so big, so global. Then I was invited by a business meeting in South Germany of upcoming CEOs of big business companies to introduce the Academy of Language and Poetry. In this dialogue, I was astonished to learn that these people had an urge to discuss ecological questions. They wanted to make something better than their ancestors. Antje Boetius told me, It would need only 100 big companies to sit together on a table and the world crisis would be avoided. I don't believe this, but it was interesting to hear. But why don't they do it? There was a main question in the room. Why are so few things happening? Who is doing something? And how does this doing something work? So I started my research for Dresden, asking different people about their way in this matter, an activistic, bureaucratic, economic way. People from the Federal Ecological Agency, students, Fridays for Future, and the Gelände, the church, Cradle to Cradle, the civilian ecological agency, a CEO working with hydrogen technology. Later on, people who were affected by the flood in Rhineland in 2021, catastrophe management, a farmer, then the lawyers of big NGOs like Greenpeace and German Watch, and everybody told me a different story about the water. So I don't know much about the water, but it is the main meta topic question concerning ecological crisis in Middle Europe, the drought and the floods. Water is always lacking or too much. In the last 10 years, there was a lot of talk about water management in cities, and some of these cities, as along the Rhine or the Danube, are talking about flood management for a very, very long time. New is the conscience about the small rivers, tributary rivers, along. The suddenness of floods, for example, 7 meter water walls in the Ahr Valley in 2021. I asked about agency, and the answer was non-agency, or between agency and non-agency. It is not possible to do this and that. The political will is lacking, the money is lacking, the industry is not ready, the church is not sincere about it, they are too nice to the people, etc., etc. The only ones talking about agency and success were the lawyers of German Watch and Greenpeace, who have fought a lawsuit against the federal state of Germany 2021 because it didn't, because it didn't follow the climate policy of the EU. It was a groundbreaking judgment with a justification of the right for freedom of the upcoming generations. And these upcoming generations protesting, they don't want to be the only ones to do this political work. They are not, but the public image is still like this. How to write a theater play about such a question, or matter, or material? The simple traditional answer is you can't just do a documentary play. You have to consult the myth. King Oedipus is one of the most famous Greek myth, which is now linked to contemporary theater language, or Antigone. For me, it was a biblical story available in every elementary school in Austria. Jonah and the Whale, the book of Jonah. I liked it because it has many agencies, humans and not humans. Remember the whale, the tree, Jonah. And it is a story about the water in every condition. And about responsibility and the question of being in charge for delivering the message. The question of time, of generation, who is the child, who the adult, who is responsible, and that the protest seems to be also declared as childish, was very important for me. Sometimes it had to make something visible in changing the position. So I let my experts become children of the main characters, and the main characters seem to be like kids, and it helps to use different aesthetic languages to show that there are some incomparabilities. What was astonishing for me that the play in its tragic humor was understood and discussed very well by the audience of Dresden, that was more astonishing, and later in Berlin. I decided to use aesthetic tools like comic, work with absurdness and slapstick, and the rhetoric which repeatedly was addressing the audience directly and therefore fictionalizing fictionalizing it in hope that they would change. I show you now a very small trailer.
Woo! Oh, doch, ist das schon so. Ist das schon so?
Du machst die Tür auf und da steht eine Wand Wasser.
Ist das hier der Infoabend der Dresdner Wasserbetriebe?
Ich kann mich auf sowas einfach nicht konzentrieren.
Das ist wichtig zu verstehen. Sie sagen, wir machten nichts. Aber das stimmt nicht.
Ich habe an alles gedacht.
Also den Einfluss von meiner eigenen Haustür habe ich komplett vergessen.
Und schon wieder ist ein Jahr vergangen.
Tut mir leid, wir sind nicht für Sie zuständig.
Wer konnte ahnen, dass dieser Käfer wichtiger ist als wir? Wie heißt der überhaupt?
Natürlich hätte man mehr wissen können. Das sagt sich nur so leicht, wenn man nicht ins Geschehen verwickelt war.
War doch vorauszusehen.
Wie bitte?
Ich habe wasserunabhängige Pflanzen.
Bald, sehr bald, ganz nah, gleich demnächst.
Die Zukunft war damals genau 20 Jahre entfernt. Und das ist sie heute.
Das ist sie heute auch noch.
Wer konnte ahnen, dass der rote Lila wichtiger ist als wir?
Wir werden um ein Kurzzeit-China nicht herumkommen.
Das sind Bürgerskinder, denen weiß Gott nichts zustoßen war. Und alle heißen Greta.
Energiediktatur, Konsumdiktatur, 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 Konsumdiktatur.
When you first began it.
So, I do not know much about the water. We understand the rivers, as you already heard today, as highways for goods and people and waste. The ecological space as resource for food, the fishes and mussels. We even don't notice that we are the environment of that we are the environment of rivers, the river catchment area, Flusseinzugsgebiet in German. We are misunderstanding the rivers. We are partly lost in water management and ignorance. And when I say we, then I mean we here in Austria, in Middle Europe, in the Western industrial capitalistic world. And the we is not simple thought. We are misunderstanding the rivers. We are partly lost in water management and ignorance. We, as a whole society, but we have to celebrate now, we have to celebrate now the many people helping in the last weeks, the many fire workers and neighbors, the helicopter pilots and helping hands, the citizens who were here and did their work here in Lower Austria, in Vienna, and in Poland and Czech. We are starting to avoid, you know, here a bigger catastrophe was avoided. And that's our point now. We are starting to avoid catastrophes which shouldn't occur at first. The impossibility to understand nature in another way than as a free resource or as a problem destroying goods, income and growth is a deep fact. But of course, there are different ways to be aware of the world. There's only hegemony and hierarchy between these understandings, as we see in present. And there is a certain capability or pattern how we listen to stories. For example, the need for heroes. I loved this summer to read Elisabeth Colbert's book, Under a White Sky, The Nature of Future. She tells a lot about water, about how we are trying to do geoengineering, how the Chicago River was changed in its way, fishes were put in other ecosystems to control them and becoming a plague. There are a lot of tragic heroes in her stories, and it is full of making and doing and planning. I learned this summer also a lot about rivers, listening to the Conference of Rivers, a radio play series by Frank Radatz, Dennis Reimann, and Leopold von Verschuer. He was the director of this award-winning series, and he made the directing choice to give the rivers very individualistic voices and languages. It was funny to listen to this idea of having a conference about their own rights, the new development of law we are facing today. As I mentioned, The lawyers were the only dialogue partners who were very self-confident. The law is leading. It has agency. That is a little sad, but the beginning. The elephant in the room is the question, if the politicians do what they were condemned or sentenced to do, what result came out of this lawsuit from 2021? I think it's another lawsuit, but not much more. But it is more a turning point in consciousness. And there are new lawsuits pending. And that's what I learned from the lawyers. You have to start and move on and do the next and next and next, and then we learn. And it's changing. So we need more understanding about water. Maybe the first idea would be it stands for the system of life. And there's no natural balance. It's the balance we all together need. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will pick up on this later on. But before, I would like to introduce Elisabeth von Samsonov. Elisabeth is an artist and professor of philosophical and historical anthropology at the Art Academy, at the Academy of Fine Arts in Vienna. Her research focuses on philosophy and the history of religion, the theory of collective consciousness, the history of presence of relationship between art and religion, the theory and history of the perception of women, as well as female identity and the abolition of the ego in modernity. Your artistic work includes sculpture, performance, painting, and video. Among other things, you deal with the systematic and symbolic place of female sculpture in the canon of the arts and an ecological aesthetics or geologic of the body. Your latest publications include Museum des Anfangs and the Dissident Goddess Project, which you will also talk about now, I guess. And I would like to mention that you also contributed to the exhibition The Way of the Water. And since it's installed at the Mühlbach, it was not so much affected by the flood. So actually, if you didn't see it, you have still the opportunity to see it. I'm happy you're here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me, Florian. And thank you everybody who talked substantially for me. So I have a difficult task to subsume somehow your points. And I changed totally the content of my talk because of the flood. I was thinking I'm going to talk nicely, philosophically, about the bifurcation and the politics of the water, like that it is like something spiritual and that it's something chemical and that it's something lively and that it's something technological, because this is exactly what I lived in my life and what I experienced and what I'm interested in, this bifurcation, which is maybe the pathos of water in a modern civilizations, because I think we had all something like a spiritual approach to water as well, and you can see it everywhere, and I could see it everywhere. There's a lot of pilgrimage sites also in Austria with holy wells. Everything is full of holy wells, like Schönbrunn und Rollerbrunn, and I don't know, even every little region has a holy site quoting water. And nevertheless, all our rivers are dammed and have been transformed to canals. So this is something really interesting, that there is something like a technological approach to water. The damming, the whole, how do you say, water supply. I mean, they started to do this enormous technological achievement of producing water supplies for cities, for villages. Everybody has a tap water, you know. And also the tap water. I mean, the fact that there is something like a tap water changed the approach to water. You know, it was something that is like in the supermarket. It's like something that is available, that comes from the tap. Nobody remembers the source and the well and the origins of the water. So I go a little bit back in my own story. So here you see the village of Tittmoning, and you can see down in the right a big house. This is a house, my house. I bought it when I was 24 because it should have been broken down because it was in the flooded area, or the constantly flooded area of Salzach. And I bought it because it was very cheap, and I tried to live in this house. And it was a weird idea, but I loved this house. It was a very nice house. It was from the 15th century. And I had a circus there, and the stable was in the house. So I lived in this house for 13 years, and I was flooded all the 2 years, or all the 3 years. And at the beginning, I thought, okay, I knew from before that I'm going to be flooded regularly. And sometimes the flood was like this, as you see it in this photograph from 59. It's like a historical photograph, and sometimes it was less catastrophic. Like here. So you can see I painted the house blue. This is the house, and this is a normal flood, you know, that occurred like every 2 or 3 years. But I must say, living in this house changed my approach to water totally, because actually I saw this river flowing in his bed when there was no flood. It was like a minor river, you know, trying to meander in the canal, you know. And when the flood came, you know, it became like a majestic being, you know. It was totally freed. And we were in awe because of its power. We saw that it's a power that we did not really look at before. And so, I mean, I felt myself this ambivalence, you know, that I had, of course, the house under flood and weeks before me of repairing everything and collecting. But nevertheless, you know, I experienced something that was really interesting. And here you can see what happens, you know, what happened with the canalization of the rivers, because this is like the road dates of a flood of this same river, which is so canalized that within 2 days you can see from the 28th of August to the 29th of August produced this enormous flood. So sometimes I was not even at home, and the mayor would ring me up and say, oh, I have to evacuate you. But I was shopping in the city. You know, when I went, there was no reason to get evacuated. But this is the effect, of course, of the canalization of the river. So the floods become also more dangerous and more severe the more canalized the river is. This is like a law, and you can see it exactly in this river. But what was also in this city, which is a very nice city, Tittmoning an der Salzach in Bavaria, is a grove of wonderful trees behind the church, up to the castle, where you have a wonderful, a forest full of springs and sources. And there was also a pilgrimage place where the people went to worship the water. And I did research on this place, and it's really interesting because you can see that the people really took serious the water, and they went and they bathed in the water to get healed. The water itself was the healing essence they went to, and actually there was also like some archaeological finds that also the Romans had a water sanctuary there, because there was a little altar for the nymph that was found there. A little altar was just written nymphis, as to the nymph. So this was a water that was very, very long known to the people and very dear to the people, and they believed in the healing forces of this water. And when I went there, all the trees fell down, and the city of Tittmoning cut the rest of the trees, and it was really a disaster. It looked very, very sad and very, very abandoned. So we did an art project there, which ended in a disaster and in a case in front of the court because I was accused to be a blasphemic artist or like a national spiritist or something, a geopsychopathic, and which is true in a way. Yeah, it was a real good diagnosis. And what we found out, and to make it short, this was that during all this procedure of creating the art and looking at this nice place and playing with the whales and the source and thinking of the nymph, the old spring that had fired the whole activity of healing and pilgrimage returned. So it sprang up again and is still running. So this is a very nice story about exactly how water that's used to have a relationship and a friendship with a human will withdraw when this friendship ends. So the people did not even remember anymore when the spring started to stopped flowing. Okay, then this is the story from the 90s, you know. Okay. And then, funnily enough, I went to Bangladesh and I married a Bangladeshi man, and we lived in the district of Pirotspur next to Borishal. And the first time when I flew to Bangladesh and we wanted to land, and I shouted in the airplane, I said, but there's no land to land, because when you land in Dhaka, you see only in the last minute the airport, because you see only water and you see no land. You know, there's so few land in Bangladesh, because Bangladesh is the delta of Brahmaputra and Ganga. There's the biggest rivers coming down from the Himalayas, so it's only water. So we lived in the water, and I learned how people can live with the water, which was funny enough, because that moment I left totally my little shocks from the floods in my house, you know, because this is another story. So this is the view from our house in Borishal. And so everything that we did, we had to do it on the water, of course, and the people are amazingly skilled with water, amazingly. You cannot imagine how long they are able to dive and they come back with a fish in the hand. So this is really incredible. And this is something I found out now, because my friends also told me, because the water is also rising, and due to the fact that we all lived on small islands, and some of them started to be flooded, they created this floating gardens. So they have these big structures where they put the gardens on, and they are able to rise and go down with the waters. And it's a very, very beautiful type of gardening system. So like how can I live with the water? Of course, I mean, Bangladesh itself is like it's one disaster zone. If you look at the disaster map in the world, so Bangladesh is dark red, you know, because it is not only the flood, but also the typhoon. And there's everywhere in every village a typhoon shelter, and I live two typhoons, so that's really something. You have to go to the typhoon shelter, but not only because it's dangerous, but even if it's a small typhoon, you know, your house is blown away because it's made by bamboo leaf. And then you have to make another one. Yeah. and so this is now this what I said, geopathic anatomy. You know how I look for water. Because I started to be a water woman, and I look for water wherever I am. So now I am in the north of Lower Austria, in Hadres, as you know maybe, and we have there this project, the Dissident Goddesses land. It means we bought land, and we have a land there, and we have a collective, and we use it like a laboratory exploring the land. And what you see here is that we have a sort of task force, and we go with a rod looking for water, underground water. You know, where is the water? And what we found is very interesting. You see here that we have found in a very, very small place, which is maybe 2,000 square meter, 19 wells, 19 point of wells, and artesian wells, most of them artesian wells, which are under pressure and would come out of the underground, but they are inactive. They are from prehistory. So you can also test, is it active, is it not active, is it, was it there or is it still there, in which type of depth is it, and how much is it. So all these points, this wonderful world of artesian water in this site, are inactive. So we even tried to drill, as you can see here, with a very interesting gadget. Can you see what we invented to drill? Drill by hand, yeah. 10 meter. And we made a wonderful a festival for the water, and we are drilling about the water. Here you can see the hole did not come. So the water needs more attention in this place. And and we are working on this. Yeah, we are working on this. And so my last chapter is about what I did here in St. Pölten, because it's a very different issue. I created a toy for a kennel for the Mühlbach. And I wanted to create a toy because I wanted to amuse this kennel, and I wanted to amuse it according to the syntax maybe it knows, because it knows, you know, when you want that your baby becomes a lorry driver, you give a little lorry, you know. And I gave a sort of a machinery which does not work to the working river, you know, that this is more or less the idea. And I started to be very interested in turbines, because the turbines, of course, turbine technology is exactly belonging to this bifurcation other branch, you know, the technologies of the water. So here you can see how much these scientists were trying to find out how the water enters the shuffle, and how does it turn, and what is the power. And you see all this incredible, it's wonderful, you know. We're really thinking a lot about water, but it's technicality, of course, as pure force. So here you can see a vertical Francis turbine, which is exactly the one which is in the Hammerwerk. And here you can see what I tried to draw, that the water arrives and goes through the turbine, and there's this disturbance when it gets out of the turbine. This is on the top of this drawing, that you get this zigzag lines. It's a little bit disturbed, you know. You need to re-amuse it. Because what is super sensitive, of course, because it is sensitivity, nothing else. It's also our sensitivity. And it does not like these loops all the time, you know. So we have to find out how can we recombine this bifurcation, you know? As long as we see the bifurcation, I would say that we see the problem and we see the way back, you know? As long as we can see both sides of it, there's also still the solution. So this is what I tried to draw. This is the body of the earth and the inner waters, and how the inner waters and the whole body of the earth communicate. They all communicate. You know, it's also her life and her being. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for your speeches, for your inputs, and yeah, difficult to bring it together, but maybe we just focus on some of these aspects. And I would actually like to start also, because of course, Irina, your wonderful opening is still resonating in the space. Maybe start with you, and also you, Edson, to the degree that I still wonder a bit about maybe from my, well, very Western mindset, wonder about this relationship between the knowledge you talked about, the traditional, the indigenous knowledge that is there, and legal concepts that you both are also involved in, very skeptically, but you're involved in that. And maybe, I don't know, could you talk a bit about how this comes together, or is one, or is it disconnected and you just use it as a tool? Or maybe to relate to a speaker we had at the Art of Assembly, Radha D'Souza, a professor from India, and she wrote a book, What's Wrong with Law, with Rights, where she basically shows how flawed Western concepts of law and legal thinking are from the very beginning. So in a way, maybe it's also the question is, do you believe that the legal system can be used, can be reformed, or is it actually, would it have to be abandoned completely to start over again? Then the question, of course, is how realistic that might be. So a lot of questions, but maybe you take what you want from it.
In its essence, European law is, I would say it's really dirty. It's dirty law.
Sorry.
Because it's so tainted by different structures from different cultural beliefs and ways, but mainly because it's something that is pointing more about ownership of everything. So that's why I call it dirty. Because ownership is not clean. Ownership has robbed the people of Europe of all their land. That is the point. This is European law, instructed by church, by the Catholic Church, with the help of the Roman Empire, with Greek law. So my deep feeling is that it really needs to be cleaned up in such a way that everybody on this Mother Earth, for me, has the right to legal guardianship, ownership, to also the right to be protectors, but most of all, the right to be the keepers, sacred keepers of the love that they are and the peace that they carry. Until we clean this up, how can we be pure in heart? How can we really bring change? I come from this, but I come from the understanding of the way that my people are. We see, as my brother has said, we are all symbiotic in the creation. We are all the reciprocity of God's love, Mother Earth's love, daily. Just take a breath. And you'll find out. You understand the concept is much more deeper. It's about your symbiotic relationship with life. Otherwise, this is not the place to be a human being. We need to clean it up.
I don't think I have much to add after that, but I think you mentioned Antigone, right? Antigone, you probably remember this story. She wanted to, in one of these the stories, she wanted to bury her brother, and she was not allowed. And then she reminded the city, the king of the city, they are lost. Bigger and more important than the city laws. Indigenous peoples, when they defend the right of the nature, of the river, they are, in other words, say that they are laws that are bigger and more important than the laws you are creating to control the river. the technicality, the technocracy that we see dominating our lives is the enemy number one of nature, because we want to commodify nature, we want to control nature. For centuries, our lifestyle, our places we wanted to call home has been doing what to nature? Controlling, exploiting, burying the rivers, try to dictate the rivers, to manipulate, dominate them, and without the humble feeling that we are not bigger than the river. We are not more powerful than the rivers. And then based on this feeling of, look, we depend on the river. We belong to them. The indigenous peoples proposed this transformative law or principle to the humanity, to the industrialized society. You cannot base your life principles, your lifestyle on laws, on this idea of property, on this idea that everything only has value if you see utility, this utilitarian approach to life, on the things that are bigger than us, that are more important than us. And then the law has, the Western law is so anthropocentric that exists only to serve this individual created by the elite, because we know that everybody else, you have to pay high price to have law, to a water, to have a clear air. And we know that billions of people in the world are paying high, very high prices to have what we have the right to have, the life, to have a good life. We don't have. No, then it's because of the benefit of some. And they do that in the name of the law. They do that because they created law to justify it. And then we need a ontological transformation of the law. Which, what I mean is to transform, the law needs to reveal all its foundations, about what is reality, what is important for us. Is that my property, my anthropocentric view to the planet, or the multi-species? There are other species. They are not only bigger, more powerful, more ancient than us, but also they protect us, the rivers, for example.
Thank you. Let's maybe stay for a moment there. I mean, I would say in the small defense of Creon that the gods were sending mixed signals. Huh? So it was also a problematic position he was in. But besides that, I wonder, because to stick with this idea of the legal personhood, because that's a concept that paradoxically or cynically, it existed for corporations before. So it existed, but it was for, I don't know, Google or something like this. And to take this, I still would maybe stay a little bit more. Do you think that the use of this concept of legal personhood is part of the cleansing of the ontological change of the system, or is it an instrument that is used now, but actually is pragmatically helpful, but not much more?
I always speak only a few words, then my sister can complement. But I think we are also dealing with a translation. When these terms were used, also this expression indigenous peoples, they are translated functional ideas, imaginative tools to try to implement transformations. The personhood of a river is based on a principle of relationality. We are all related to each other. And this principle of relationality is based on our traditional narratives, our spiritual views, our legal systems, as well. And in our ontology, our, the way we see life, we see reality. It's part of our everyday reality. When she was saying, teaching us that we have to greet the river, this really happens to many communities, indigenous communities around the world. They don't do anything without going to greet the river or the forest. They are not the tree huggers that people, create this parody on TV, etc. They are real people. They believe in that. It's like you say, you go to a Christian, fundamentalist Christian, say that, look, Jesus never existed. If you say this to them, or God is something that man created, if you touch their ontological reason to live it, to do what they do, they will be very angry because you are disrespecting what is the foundation of their life, their identity. When we say that this relationship with the river is the foundation of our identity, is where we also draw our laws. Yeah, you would like to influence these anthropocentric laws because it's clearly is against humanity, these anthropocentric laws, even though it's called anthropocentric. It is anthropocentric, but it's for elite. Could be called elitist law, right? But...
But I also feel that we miss the ecocentric of all of this, because we put ourselves as human beings outside of the echo of life, of nature, of belonging. So I look at the ecocentric. Why are we not understanding this is one Mother Earth? Where are we going otherwise as human beings? So it's also an echo. But in this echo, for me, there is an understanding and a deeper godlike that we touch that is far beyond ourselves as an explanation, far, far beyond ourselves. Because this then allows me to involve my ancestors that are from the universe. My ancestors are also this, not star people, not whatever. They are the cosmology of me, is a deeper understanding of the DNA of what is connected to the water, to the people that I know and can call as my ancestors. So these ancestors I can talk to freely, the wind, the rain, the sun. These are my ancestors and not unrelated to me. The relationship goes deeper as the cosmological connection, which is a connection far beyond ourselves as human beings. So for me, deeper than all of this, we have an ecocentric connection to our all of this creation that is around us, but even deeper, it goes far beyond the universe. Kia ora, and this is very Māori. Tau Marama, the light of the universe. Kia ora.
Thank you.
To clean it up.
Yeah. The cleaning, I take up the cleaning up part. And hand it over to you, Katrin, in a way. Because in the preface of your play, The Water, you write, excuse my clumsy translation, you write, everything is so far, far too far away. The disasters that take place are always somewhere else, even if they actually happen on our doorsteps. They are still called natural disasters. Our knowledge about them is also kept as a distance. So with all the research you did, and you talked a bit about it in Dresden, where the big floods were happening in 2002 and 2013, I think. Do you think, what is your feeling, and you talked a bit about it, but maybe what has been learned about it? What is there learning? Are we in a moment now with the whatever flood, and at least a little bit more talk about it, maybe a little bit different kind of conversations that like we are having? Do you feel that there's a change happening, or that we just repeat, or we had to depend on the lawyers that you already quoted?
Yeah, I find it very interesting to look a little bit closer to the law, because I think there are different concepts in Europe of it's not only ownership, the lawsuit in 2021 was about the freedom of generation, so it's Verfassungsgericht, a constitutional law, so it's something else. And what I learned, I have to answer first here, what I learned is that these different law concepts get in conflict there's an architecture of law we are building now, maybe helping us out of this situation. I'm not sure about this picture of cleaning, because I'm not so, I like it, but it's not, I like the dirt. I think there's a lot going on and a lot changing. And yes, of course, we experience it here in Austria the last 2 weeks, that there has been a different way to deal with the situation than 20 years before. And this is super. That's great. But it's only a one little step. Yeah? We have to do much more. I was also thinking, for me, the most interesting point is in the law and in the courtyard. You are in the court. There are people talking. It's the only possibility: language, people, anthropocentric. Yeah, but who is speaking for the rivers? Who is speaking for the? That's very interesting. In Dresden, they had the problem for example, that they decided after the big flood from 2002. I think it was this, that they are, or 2000, I'm not sure when, that they are creating space for the river, that the Überflutungsgebiet, the flood areas, that the water can escape. But then the ecological activists came and said, no, they are the trees are dying there. So conflict between trees and river. So it's not so, it's very tricky. You often have conflict situations between the different, it's not only mankind and nature against, but different, we have to find solutions. Living in a city, I learned that in the last 20 years, there was a lot of development to think about the Schwammstadt, the city of drainage, sponge city. I was renovating my house and I left the floor open that the water can go through. And I think we are much more aware about how to live with the water now, and that we need, for the cities are becoming hotter and hotter, we have to help the water back in the city. When I came here to St. Pölten, I learned there's a new sculpture in a very ugly square. It's a very ugly square, and there's this sculpture who lets clay sculpture, ich weiß nicht, wie nennt man das, eine, ich weiß nicht mal auf Deutsch, eine Pergola, of clay, letting the water drip down so it can stay there and cool the area. I don't know why this area has to be cooled, but so we can find a lot of signs of art and architecture and trying to deal with this situation. But the main question will be how we can't get really out of the situation that we need to organize it with money and people and the society. Yeah, it's not, it's a very, we are always, when you are concrete in a situation, you have always to find the main conflict and to help see how you can find the balance there, yeah, and how to be helpful somehow to get some ecological balance back or some to improve the situation, but you won't find a really solution for everything. We are talking very global, so that's very, very important to talk global as well, but I like to go in focus, and then you see, oh, the trees versus the river, and who is speaking for the trees. But that was my question to you. Who is speaking for the rivers in the at a lawsuit in court? Who is in charge? Who can do it? That's the question.
It's a good question. The question of being global and be local is just a point of view, I think, is because this global is an abstraction that we need that to know how, what to do on the ground. When we mentioned the transformation of the law and bringing in indigenous ontologies, we have to have like a really wide scope. One of the indigenous perspectives on personhood is a collective right, is collective protagonism. And then there are other principles. One is very clear for everyone, is the ecological impact of some actions. And then we have to act more as a collective, because the law, the power of the law is to have one person owning the property, is the foundation of the modern Western law. There is one representative of one person. And we have people claiming they own rivers, they own forests. Perhaps there will be these trees are in the land of one owner. Who owns this land where the tree is or the river is passing? Maybe there is an owner there, or the city, or the. Then we have to call all the collectivities that are involved. This is some solutions that some cities are finding for indigenous peoples. We have always been the voices of biodiversity, of the rivers, of forests in many places. And then we go to court. We go in Ecuador, in many places, in Bolivia, etc. It's easier for us. But for the Western law to be changed, people have to start acting as a collective. To be true democracy, citizenship. Exactly. Because if you think this is not my problem, this is the problem of the next city, and then we have a problem. That's the transformation we need in law, in this, because who creates the law? Good, full citizens.
One approach actually to not to solve this, but to deal with this was Bruno Latour and Frédéric Aituati state had a parliament, based on Latour's Parliament on Things, had an assembly, an alternative climate conference close to the Paris one 10 years ago, where they try to find a different way, I mean, based on these concepts, to negotiate things differently. And Frédéric Aituati, the theater director and collaborator of Bruno Latour, quite openly said, of course it was a disaster. So of course it didn't work, because how can it work when you try it out? But it was an attempt, one of the attempts to try to think what does it mean, representation for other entities and so on, even within a Western logic maybe. But of course that's also messy and dirty in many ways.
But I think it's really necessary to come down to a point of understanding as an individual, I am the river. How do you really take that concept into yourself and be the river? Then, as a collective, it is much easier. We are the river. It always has been. It was my great-great-grandmother
that said, Ko au tawa, te awa ko au. I am the river is me. So I think we have to also look at the individual understanding of our ontological, basic connection. Where is your connection? What have you done with your connection? Why do you ask the question, who represents? You already do. You are a tree in you. You are the water in you. You are the earth. Also in court, in a case of law, in a case of court, yes, it has to come to this basic, definitive, defining understanding. As a person, but as the people, and I agree, we are collectively, but collectively minded, we are the river. The river is me.
I think maybe that's a good moment to also to bring you back to the conversation, Elisabeth, because I find with what you presented and what you practice also with the dissident goddesses land is in a way, is try to find also own roots, because of course we also have the problem of appropriation, of being this of translation and all these problems that you already mentioned, and there's something in there that also is not. Is a different kind of appropriation, but rather into the past, maybe, or that you are looking for. So I'm really curious about what you're doing, also in the way to bring another aspect in, which for the art of assembly was always important, is the role of art. So which didn't have much room so far, or indirectly had tonight. So maybe you can talk a little bit about what role art or your practice as an artist play for you in your work?
I think it was very important because the art practice or this art project put an hypothesis in for discussion, and not only maybe a hypothesis, but a sort of ritual. So this is also the beginning of an ontological transformation, I would say. And you have to, formulate this thesis that maybe, not maybe, you, that this law, this body of law has a big lack in regard to how it distributes rights. And so I think it would also be very profitable to turn. So I have now the project to turn our mountain where the goddess's land is into a person. This is definitely my goal. And I want that you notice that this is a goal. And this is already the hypothesis that has to be discussed. It is not my mountain. There's a lot of people that own this mountain. We only a little part of it. But it has four archaeological sites. And it has an outstanding ecology because it's the hotspot for big, predators like eagles, because they need the thermic function of it. So that it's like the bar or the hotspot, it's the restaurant, everything for the predators. And when the predator comes, all levels of ecologies are okay, because you need the food, you need everything, you need the tree, you need the everything. So this is a sign. So I like to think about how to redistribute subjectivity in the sense, because this is the only sense we can understand. What rights do you have? So even if it's totally cuckoo, we give the right to the mountain or we give to the river, and we don't know how to represent, because we don't know how to represent, because what we don't have at all is our emotional bond with the land. We do not have it. This is what Bruno Latour said. This is the art to do now, to bond with the land. Because, it was, in very short history of the Second World War, all this groups of notions with the land and the soil, was very toxic, intoxicated from national fascism, So nobody dared to touch upon this. Nobody. So all the whole left and intellectual communities, they could not really discuss these issues and they avoided it. And now they have no vocabulary for it. And they don't dare to say, oh, I love this land. You know, it's, if you love the land, yeah. Are you bad in folk or what? I mean, do you have a sort of problem, you know? So the connection is made that you're very backward, you're very maybe traditionalist, you're maybe reactionary, whatever you are, if you love a land. You know, this is something that you have to really fully undo because you have to love the land to then, after once the redistribution of rights has started, it has to start immediately. This is what I would claim, immediately, even if you don't know how to, because we don't know how to so much. And, I mean, this is why there's a coordinate discussion, because even legal practices that are trained and they are active, they are not well done. So why we have a problem with this, you know, giving right to a river or giving right to a... So we have to learn how to make a nice procedure out of it. We have to learn and we have to see more and more what it would claim from us. Because the problem is that it could easily turn out as it has already turned, that you have like national parks. This is, you know, it's also a law. But nobody, I mean, who identifies with this fucking national park? You know, nobody. It's only protected for I don't know what reason. You know, but there's no community that says, oh, this is our national park or what. Or we live in the national park. There's individuals that like it, like Bodo Hell, who disappeared in the national park. But, yeah.
I would actually maybe... slowly move to the, let's say, in a way, last round, even though we could talk for long, I guess. But Irena will also do a closing ceremony, so we will need some time for this. So maybe from my side to end with, I've just been reading, like many others at the moment, the Clify novel, The Ministry of the Future, which ponders, in a way, the idea that the mix of violence or eco-terrorism, which also is mentioned in your play, or eco-dictatorship, in this case, eco-terrorism on one hand, and geoengineering, these two things together that don't sound too sympathetic at the beginning, that this actually might be the only way to stop the climate catastrophe. So a completely, I would say, a very different approach from what we were talking about. But just to mention this, towards the end of the session, to maybe because then I to hand over the microphone to you again, Irena, to ask the other three to maybe say in a maybe even possibly as concrete as possible way, what do you think? And it was mentioned a couple of times differently, but now as final statements, what do you think? What needs to be done now in the situation we are in, from your position and from your point of view?
What needs to be done? I mean, I think there's a big need of understanding. I mean, we have such a lack of understanding. I mean, the complex interrelationships and we are talking all the time about ecology, but I don't think that we really know what ecology is. And I'm quite afraid that if we don't... really dive deep into the understanding of what ecology really is. All these fantasies about the means that have to be taken inside of engineering and they can be very problematic and can be also very dangerous, you know, because you don't know to which extent things can get even worse. Because this story we already know too well, that this is a question of how to handle things. You know, it's not only about of activity planning and technological solutions, especially with the weather. I am totally suspicious what this would, at the end of the day, bring.
Oh, well, thank you. I go, because of my work as an indigenous activist, and living and working here in Europe, I will give you a very, very concrete way that you can engage and help indigenous peoples, the planet, and these issues. Right now, there is a railway, actually the complex of logistics and transportation using building routes, highways, and railway from a place called Mato Grosso in Brazil, is in the center of the country. Is Mato Grosso is the place of the second most important bioma in Brazil and the most diverse bioma, savanna, in the world. This place, this Mato Grosso, probably feeds 7-8 Austrians, and 42% of this savanna has been burned in the last 4 years under fire by industrial agriculture, and to make possible to build this highway crossing, I think, 9 national parks, 13 indigenous lands, 3 uncontacted tribes, and bringing down like ancient trees, forests, contaminate rivers, and many of the rivers I showed here, to transport 2 things to Europe: grain and metal, minerals. And your money is financing that. And European Union reserve a huge amount of money for Brazil, German, Spanish, and Italian companies to build this there. And I don't want to propose what you can do, but you see the problem. That is our problem now, right? We cannot just think about the local here, because the money here is financing a catastrophe there that will impact you in many ways, not only drought, floods, but many other ways. And also the food you are eating is a poison food. If our rivers, our land, I challenge you to tell me where on this planet there is a piece of soil, land, is free of agrotoxin, free of human dirt that is very poisonous for all of us. And then your money, your citizenship participation, politics, when you vote, when you decide about the future of Europe, you are also deciding about the future of peoples elsewhere, indigenous peoples, forests, relatives, and things that will impact you.
I have many thoughts. The first is I would like to support your position. And I think that you are telling us a very, very true thing, yeah, that we are, that's also our, we have to think global. We have to understand that we are responsible. Yeah. That's very, very important. Yeah. First of all, that's the most important thing. Then the other thing is, I would say there are very, very simple instruments we could use. For example, it's now very banal, but, like tempo limit, no big cruising ships anymore. Very simple things. Yeah, tempo limit, for example, it's such a tiny thing, tiny decision, and it would change a lot. Yeah, and I don't get it why it's not coming. And it's only Germany, it's the FDP avoiding it, and on the other hand, yeah. I think we would also need more awareness and more teaching in school, in Bildung. Yeah? Bildung, what's the word in English? Bildung. Education. Something a little bit different, than better than that, but more thinking about and more learning and more unlearning. Yeah, that's... Yeah, Bildung is also unlearning, yeah, nowadays, yeah. So, but... Yeah, solidarity to what you said.
Thank you for your threefold, almost final words to this conversation. Thank you for all your talks and your participation here. It was really very inspiring, and it will continue. So I actually just hand over the microphone now to you, Irina.
Sure. Yeah. I would love to support what is happening also. I give me and my people and everything to this. But most of all, I call on people to acknowledge Mother Earth. This is me, for me, the absolute first essence of anything. If you cannot acknowledge our Mother Earth, why are you here? And I send that out to everybody. If you can't or will not acknowledge our Mother Earth, why are you on Earth? You are an Earth being. And everything that is happening is your responsibility as an Earth being. So I challenge you directly. Everything that is not okay is because you are not being an Earth being, a Mother Earth being. Somehow you've lost that connection. That is the deepest connection you've lost. Then this is God's creation. They say. But I believe if you really understand the creation of God, the Creator, the great Creator, there's no question. So I also would like, there is jurisprudence with different situations that are becoming more and more stronger in legal systems at the moment. So I think this is really important. This and this basis. So with this, I am very thankful to Lorena. I'm very thankful that you have brought me here, to my dear sisters. Joanne, you're ringing me up. But also Florian. For this art assembly is not just an art assembly. This is a deep connection to Mother Earth. You asked for what you asked for. You asked for the flowing of the rivers, trying to ask which one is the which. The original river, the ancestral river, now has its full strength and is showing its full strength. The created river. It's okay. But to the people of Pulton, this is your feeling, your emotion, your responsibility for the Mother Earth. So, in this great flooding, I bought three stones that have been listening to us, watching us, hearing us. Because it's time for this water to close, as it is for this art assembly with the amazing people that have been here. So I'm very, very honored to be here with you both, Florian and John. And my dear Lorena. But also being together with you, giving hope is a situation for the future of 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 the future for people to live here on our Mother Earth with her. So I'm just going to call them. And the prayer is for them to slowly, they really want it quite fast. The trains don't run properly. Return the water to the Mother Earth. Return the water to the Mother Earth. Return the water to God's love.
but let the people learn. The love of existing and loving is the hope. I give hope to my brother for everything that is not okay. If the people love the mother, if you really call upon the mother to give her creed and war, nothing would survive. Nothing. Nothing nuclear can stand in her way. So I'm saying, love the mother. She is our all in all. Or hold your breath for 5 minutes. So simple. So exact. And I will take that in the court of law and challenge any human being. Just hold your breath for 5 minutes and then you can give me your decree. So yeah. I also close this art assembly that has gathered for this rivers, that Triazin, for the river Arkab, Rubak. I have a little bit of resistance with the Rubak men, but the thing is, they flow the water of love. And we need a connection to that as people. If you can't find the water of love in the rivers, find it in yourself. Sa. Kenuye. There you go. It's done.